has been an awakening. Have you felt it?
Light it up.
Punch it.
Welcome to Unmistakably Star Wars, your source for a high-quality, informative, and entertaining look into the Star Wars galaxy. So strap yourself in, because here's where the fun begins.
Oh, man, I tell you what. I had to go to YouTube, Jeremy, and find a how-to video for how to host a podcast, because it's been so long since you've actually done this thing. I didn't know what to do. It's not like riding a bike, apparently.
Yeah, they got those, don't they?
I think they must. They must. They have the ones that, you know, get 10,000 listeners in your first episode and shoot straight to the top of the charts for iTunes and everything else.
That's right. That's right. Gosh. There's a formula.
There is a formula. Well, my goodness, my little Tauntauns, it feels like forever since we've gotten together. And I'm guessing, Bex, correct me if I'm wrong. For those of you that might be watching a video version of this, I now have a windscreen on my microphone because of everything that's going around. I believe in safe podcasting. We are keeping our social distance. We are in three undisclosed different locations. And Jeremy, you're actually, Jeremy, I'll let you tell the folks. Where are you at, Jeremy?
So I have an office in my home where I normally podcast from, but things are so insane in my house right now with three kids, a wife that's working night shifts at the hospital. I'm literally in a tiny walk-in closet in my guest bedroom with the door closed and braced.
Yeah.
Hoping that no one finds me or bothers me. So I'm in hiding.
At some point, I'm imagining that you may have like closed that door and just kind of muttered the words like, lock the door and hope they don't have blasters. Hope those kids don't get in here. although I do see a nice, what appears to be oscillating fan behind you. So that's...
Yeah, it's in here. Yeah, it's just... junk.
That's so nice.
Closet of junk.
Man, that's a huge closet. That probably rent for $1,000 a month in this town.
At least
in Santa Cruz, California, it's probably a $1,000 closet.
Oh my gosh!
You could fit a family of three in there.
It's true.
You probably could.
Yeah, bunk beds. Just stack them up, man. I kind of like that episode of Seinfeld when he keeps the Cubans in the dressers. Or was it the Japanese? I forget. I don't know. Oh my goodness. Well, listen, my little friends, welcome. We are glad that you are back with us. Yeah, the world has kind of taken a turn, got off on the off ramp that we were expecting to road trip a little longer, but I said no, we're gonna pull off here. And in doing so, we have kind of been up to a dozen different things. It seems like I know all three of us. Of course, I'm joined on this episode with Jeremy and Fun Auntie Bex, and all three of us are in education. And we were in education. Yeah,
we were in education.
Speaking of, so Bex, you work the K through six field, and so how has life changed for you with this little thing that they like to call the coronavirus?
Well, because I'm a three-quarter time employee, I actually don't have work right now.
Wow.
I'm not a full-time teacher, so I have nothing to do, but I am teaching my 7-year-old.
That's good.
And he's told me more than once that, you know, if Mrs. Poston was teaching him, it'd be way more fun.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So mama just doesn't have it, apparently.
Yeah. Well, I think that most parents are realizing that, whether they're in education or not. I've seen all kinds of cool Twitter posts and memes and everything else going around about how much teachers should actually make after this little thing. Maybe this thing was all caused by global education folks. Show the world how valuable we actually are.
Yeah.
And Jeremy, you and I, we're doing this Zoom remote learning thing. I mean, it's just slapping the phrase remote learning on it, and all of a sudden we sound official.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. People think we're legit now.
Yeah, yeah. And listen, let me be the first to say, yeah, we're not. Yeah. Bex, when you said that you're a three-quarter time teacher, I thought like, I mean, I'm employed full-time, but I probably work about half time. So I shouldn't say that, though, because as Jeremy knows, we just found out last week that one of our administrators, she and her kids now listen to USW, so we have to be careful about
scary
work jokes. Yeah. And Mr. Scott has to watch his language, too, apparently. So
I know.
I heard about that.
Oh, good times. So listen, you know, we had announced, I don't know how long ago, I want to say January, may have even been late last December in 2019, that we are going to begin a series talking about Joseph Campbell and his amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. And some Broadway fans got that. And what is interesting is with the virus thing that's crept up, we've obviously had to put things on a little bit of hiatus, but we're trying to get back in the swing. So I'm excited. This is our inaugural episode of our Joseph Campbell series studying the Hero with a Thousand Faces. And I know our next episode I'll actually be recording later tonight is actually going to be with a ex English teacher who actually has one of his I guess part of his degree was actually in ancient mythology. So it'll be interesting to get his take on the writings of Campbell and how that applies, especially to Star Wars. So without any further ado, let's jump into our closer look topic on this, our inaugural Joseph Campbell, Hero of a Thousand Faces episode.
This is Bonnie Peace.
This is Jeffrey Brown.
Hi, this is Eric Walker.
This is Jason Fry.
Hi, this is Delilah S. Dawson.
And you are listening to Unmistakably.
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 Unmistakably Star Wars, the podcast.
This bickering is pointless. Why are you asking this of me?
I am here because you are here.
We will use all our resources to unravel this mystery.
You must unlearn what you have learned.
What did you say?
Same thing I always do, talk my way out of it.
I grow tired of asking this, so it'll be the last time.
How simple you make it. Life in dark as if there is one without the other.
So who talks first? You talk first? I talk first?
So I want to tell you guys, and I think I may have mentioned this on a previous podcast, but one of the favorite things so far, and even though we're just pushing off the dock right now, the inaugural episode, one of my favorite things is as we are trying to get some guests on the show, which includes some actual legitimate Star Wars authors who will be making an appearance, I reached out, and I'm not going to say who it was, but an actual Star Wars author said this when I told him about, I just kind of narrowed that down, didn't I? The actual Star Wars author said this when I told this person about the series. And this person said, you know, that sounds interesting. I've never actually read Joseph Campbell's works. And I thought, how do you become an official Star Wars author if you've never read Joseph Campbell's works? And I thought that was both fascinating and it gave me a glimmer of hope. Maybe I too can be a Star Wars author one day. I don't know. We'll see.
You can, Devin. Yeah. You can.
It's like paint by numbers. I mean, what is there to it? Clearly. Listen, with the way fandom can be at times, I can certainly put myself out there as someone that can write something that would absolutely shred childhoods and cause anger among fans. I have full confidence in my ability to do that.
You'd be able to divide the fandom.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh, my goodness. Okay, so let's kind of push off the dock and let's get into this. Joseph Campbell, and especially in how it mirrors and how Lucas originally brought it into Star Wars, because quite frankly, all Star Wars is a retelling of a bunch of different stories from different genres, including and probably upon the foundation of mythology. And he just kind of sprinkled new names and places and all that stuff in there, which is totally great because mm-hmm. there's nothing new under the sun. So with that in mind, I want to talk today about what is it about this thing that we call the hero's journey? What is it that we find so alluring about that? And it doesn't even have to just be about Star Wars, but just in general, like when we hear, the hero's journey, that sounds amazing. I want to be a hero. So fun Auntie Bex, I want to kind of toss that your way. When you hear things like the hero's journey, or I get it, or 21st century, the heroine's journey, what about your understanding of that do you personally find alluring?
The thing that I like about it is it's for everyone. When I hear that, I think, oh yeah, that's for me. That's something I can relate to and go on myself. I can look at parts of my own life, and while I may not necessarily be a hero, I can look at parts of my own life and kind of tie into the different parts of the hero's journey and look at hero's journeys through literature and film and relate it back to my own life and my own things that I'm going through. So it's very relatable, and it's all real people going through the hero's journey. They're very tangible characters that have major, major flaws and also huge triumphs. And it's great. That's what I love about it, is it's so relatable.
Okay, so you came out of the gate strong on that one, Bex. And here's what I love most about that. No, because I think this is something that sometimes is overlooked, right? If for some of us, self-included, to throw the label of hero on us, I look around and go like, I haven't done anything heroic. Like, I haven't charged up any hills with a great enemy force atop them or anything like that. But for those of our listeners that have been with us for a long while, they've heard part of your story and your family's story. And in particular, and I'm just going to kind of take a little segue here, and that is, you and your family have actually been through what Campbell would classify as parts of the hero's journey, with your husband Jason's situation with cancer, and how you guys just went through, what was that, like a 4 or 5 year long journey from start to, and I don't even want to say finish, but let me start to where we are now.
Let's see, April 17th will be 6 years since he's had his bone marrow transplant.
Yeah.
And we're still in the thick of it, because he's still on all his medications. He's still immunosuppressed. So everything going on in the world right now is very hitting hard for us. We have to be very, very careful with him. So, I mean, there are definitely elements of it that can parallel, not that I would say we are heroes, although my husband definitely is a hero, but there are, you know, aspects of our story that I'm like, okay, here's our ordinary world, and here's what we were called to do. And I'm like, oh, hell no. And, you know, and then continue on.
Yeah. But I think that both of you, and I'll even throw Silas in there for that matter, although, like, I realize that he probably doesn't have as much of a memory of it that you and Jason obviously do, but I mean,
thankfully, no.
Yeah, truly. But I know that for you in particular, and feel free to illuminate the listeners more, but I mean, for you, it was sitting by the bedside, trying to be both wife and mom, and not even getting to see Silas as much as you wanted to. And so there were, if we look at Campbell's exploration of this journey, and you even said this just in your comments before, but that was like what you were called to do. And certainly part of the hero's journey has that call to it. I'm curious, Bex, and then Jeremy, I want to come with you, but Bex, from your perspective, what is your, I guess, kind of everyday definition of just the word hero?
Oh, the person who gets up even in the face of adversity and does the next right thing.
Wow.
Even when it's not easy, especially when it's not easy.
Yeah.
But you just take that next step forward.
Wow. That was exceptional, especially since that was totally off the top of your head. That was great.
Thanks.
I also realized this, and though our listeners won't be able to pick up on it, some of our watchers will. Bex and I have the same coffee mug, and I almost wore that hat that you're wearing, Bex, so I'm so glad that I didn't, because then people wouldn't be able to tell us apart. But
that's true.
It's true. It's true.
Although I did shave my beard.
Oh,
well. So, you know, there's that.
The viewing audience thanks you. Jeremy, let's flip it over to you for a minute, and let's just kind of pick up where Bex left off. When it comes to even defining what a hero is, what are some of the phrases or words that come to your mind? How do you kind of define a hero through your lens, your worldview?
Yeah, I think as it is coupled with like the hero's journey, I think Bex is right on with this. I mean, there's like in Campbell's version of the hero's journey, I think there's like 17 aspects to it or parts.
Right.
So it can, as you look at it, it can get a little overwhelming. But what makes it unique is that there are elements within the hero's journey that we can find relatable, that we've also experienced, and that it could be experienced in our own life and, you know, just the things we've done and seen and have had done to us, but also in the stories we love, maybe the faith that we have, there are elements within that that we can connect with. And so I think first that's the relatability is very important and essential. And I think just as we think about heroes, that's it. It's not necessarily that it's so beyond us, although in some of the stories we love, those heroes are, they feel beyond us, you know, that they are, they're doing things that we can't do.
Right, right.
But there's always those entry points that are really relatable, you know, and, you know, whether you look in Star Wars context, you look at like Rey's situation or Luke's situation, they both had moments that were like, oh, I know what that feels like to like watch the sunset and have this longing for something more, or, you know, I know what it looks like, you know, when Rey watches the ship leave atmosphere on Jakku, and there's this longing in her as well. We can connect to that. But also there is, I think what grabs a hold of us with the hero's journey is there is a hope in us to do the same things the hero does. You know, like overcoming these obstacles, you know, there is longing in us sometimes to leave our home, you know, to answer the call when we get the call, to get a call, like to something greater, you know, we want those things. And so all of us want to be heroic and we want to do the things that we're seeing in the stories we love, in the faith that we have. If there's a religious aspect to, you know, our lives, we want to imitate those people that we look to, whether it's Buddha or Jesus, or, you know, we want to aspire to those things as well. So it's interesting how heroes, the hero's journey, these, this monomyth that we're talking about, how it's so easily intertwined with what we want, what our desires are. It affects us deeply, even when we're it's unconscious. I mean, it's not in our, it's not in the front of our eyes. We're not necessarily going, oh, there's the hero's journey on the screen or on the page, but it's something deep within our DNA and it just kind of pulls us into it.
I love that. You both have done such great jobs unpacking what it means to be a hero and even part of the journey. And Jeremy, you're right. Going back to Campbell, I forget offhand. I should probably know this off the top of my head, but I think it is. It's somewhere between like 15 and 17 different steps. And there's some that probably have a little bit of overlap. And I think it might be hard pressed in real life to go like, oh, I am on steps, you know, 7A, moving on to 8. Thank you, Bex. But I think that there is something that you both have pinpointed, and that is this definition that we carry around with us of a hero is very twofold. I agree that it's something that we, I think, see in our own lives at those times. Bex, you mentioned just like... what I'll just loosely call as hashtag adulting, right? Like getting out of bed when the alarm goes off, even though you may not want to, right? Yeah. And that happens to most of us, regardless of how well work and life and stuff is going. But there's the other part of it too, where it gives us something to aspire to when the odds are stacked against us. And I think that's one thing that, you know, if I'll go back, and I know that I've talked about this on the pod before, so apologies to those that may have heard it and are hearing it again. But for the first 12, 13 years of my son's life, I was a full-time single parent working two jobs. And listen, there are millions of people to do that. And I don't want to like throw the label of hero upon myself for doing that. But I fully believe that after 12 years of that, that's probably toward the top of the list of toughest jobs ever. And so I think that when we look at single parents, especially if they are persons of color and in an inner city and not having the things that so many of the rest of us, myself included, enjoy by, whether it's geography or socioeconomics or whatever else. And so, yes, absolutely. I see that as a modern day, very tangible representation of what it means to be a hero. I'm curious, and Jeremy, let me throw this to you. When we see heroes on the big screen or in novels, do you think that when we see those things, that the most likely default setting that the average viewer, the average reader has is, boy, I'd like to do that. Or do you think it tends to be like, boy, I don't think I could do that. Or I would never be able to do what Luke did or Leia did or Rey or whomever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, and going back to like what we were talking about, just with like heroes and that, you know, Bex led with that idea of like, there's this relatability to it. Mm-hmm. I think, a guy named Christopher Vogler wrote this, it was like a memo to Disney, to Disney creators. And it was basically his version of the hero's journey. Mm. And it was like an 8-page memo. It was so popular that he turned it into a book.
Wow.
And it's phenomenal. And Vogler kind of repurposes some of the language. And he has like two things. He has this ordinary world. And I think Campbell calls it, I think Campbell calls like the world of the common day. Mm-hmm. That's that first step in the 17 parts, but it's just this common world. And then it's this call to adventure.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think when we look at heroes on screen, while we might reach a point where we're like, well, I doubt I'll be blowing up the Death Star.
right. Right.
There is that ordinary world, even though it can be fantastical, right? Where you think of like Harry Potter and, you know, going to Hogwarts or just the call where all the owls are coming with the messages and, you know, aunt and uncle or the Dursleys are trying to keep them from seeing these messages to go to school. Those things might be fantastical and like out of the realm of possibility, but there's this ordinariness to it. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's the emotional state of the character, mm-hmm. them feeling weak. Mm-hmm. We feel weak sometimes. Mm-hmm. There are elements when the hero's journey is done well in books and film, there is that when that ordinary world is presented to us, it hooks us mm-hmm. and we relate to it. Mm-hmm. And normally it's probably on an emotional level.
Right.
But then there's that call to adventure. And I think those first two things that really, those two things at the beginning of the hero's journey really grab us. Mm. And no matter how crazy it gets later, because those two things exist, and if they're done well, they can hook you to where you identify with the hero. And so, you know, for example, and I'm sure we'll talk about this later, but you know, when Luke goes to help friends or when he goes to, you know, do whatever, when I was young, I would try to imitate those behaviors because I wanted to be like my hero when I was a kid, which was Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was able even as a child to like go, well, I know I'm not going to fly an X-Wing down a Death Star trench, but I am going to face this thing that feels overwhelming and I'm going to have faith to deal with it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the beauty of the hero's journey is that as we think about heroes, while they're doing these extraordinary things, there is this some crazy just commonality that when done well, it just grabs hold of us. It's amazing to listen to like all the people that talk about when they saw Rey, especially women, when they see Rey on the screen, there's this immediate for them, this connection that for several Star Wars fans, they didn't have that, you know, and just because of gender.
Right.
And it's amazing how that grabbed hold of them, pulled them in. And this sequel trilogy is it. It is the thing for them.
Yeah.
And it's because I think those first two aspects of the hero journey really grab hold of them.
Yeah. That great job unpacking that. And I would say, true of the other film that came out around the same time that really did that, of course, was Wonder Woman. When we are, you know, in her home territory, on her home turf, and we see all these training montages of these incredibly powerful women doing things that I don't know. Jeremy, you're more of a cinephile than I am. Do we have any cinematic history of shots like that within at least American cinema? I don't think that we do. Nothing comes to mind off the top of my head.
Nothing really that's been in the pop cultural
like
zeitgeist that's just been
up
front center. There have been some other like films and storylines and like arcs, but not as accessible as the Wonder Woman film.
Yeah.
But they exist, but it's really the last 20 years that's really started to develop and kind of reach this point.
Yeah. Bex, I'm curious from your perspective, you know, when we look at heroes, and in particular Star Wars, I guess first kind of dovetail with what Jeremy just said, with kind of the female connection with Rey, and even, I guess, to cast the net a little bit wider with the sequel trilogy. And I know that you don't speak for all women, but out of the three of us, mm-hmm. you were probably best suited to do this.
Yeah, most qualified, Bex.
And so from your perspective, do you find, generally speaking, that that's accurate?
Which part's accurate?
Generally speaking.
Sorry.
Totally my fault. Generally speaking, do you find what Jeremy said as far as like, as a woman, I'm seeing this character, in the case Rey, and or I know that we have a lot of fans that fell in love with like Rose and her sister as well, for that matter, Admiral Holdo. So is Jeremy accurate when he's saying like, actually when the woman viewer sees characters like these on the screen, it brings a brand new dimension to their fandom?
I would think so. I absolutely agree with Jeremy on that. I fell in love with Star Wars with Leia. Mm-hmm. She was my connection into it, especially growing up in a family full of boys. She yes. was definitely my in, where yeah. I was like, okay, here's this one woman like holding her own against all these guys. So yeah. she was my connection point. Mm-hmm. But I have talked to many, many fans who did not find that connection with Leia in the original trilogy mm-hmm. and have found it in this sequel trilogy with Rey, with Holdo, with these very powerful, strong women figures who have come in to the Star Wars world. So I think that's absolutely an accurate description.
I agree with you. I wonder, Bex, do you think that the sequel trilogy, and we don't need to go too far down the road, but do you think the sequel trilogy does a good enough job, quote unquote, using air quotes here, a good enough job of unpacking the hero's journey within it? Or is it more muddied down or more distilled than we would have in, let's say, the original trilogy, or for that matter, even the prequels?
I think in the sequels trilogy, we're getting more hero's journeys than we got in the original trilogy. The original trilogy really focused on Luke, and he was the point that we followed through the whole thing. He took the hero's journey. Mm-hmm. In the sequel trilogy, I think they attempted, and whether or not they did it well, that can be debated. But I think they attempted to bring multiple characters along the hero's journey arc. Mm. Rey, definitely. I think they attempted to bring Kylo along the hero's journey arc. And, you know, Finn had his own hero's journey arc. We wanted to see one for Rose. We didn't get what we wanted for her. Mm. Obviously, that's the royal we.
Yes, yes.
And so, because they tried to give it to so many different characters, I think we definitely lost some of the main focal points and maybe didn't get the storyline we were wanting for all of our characters involved. For the most part, I think they did a very good job. You can't make everybody happy.
True.
I was happy with Rey's hero's journey. I think they did an excellent job with her. I would have liked to see a little bit more for Finn, since they started out so strong with him. Mm. So I think it's a yes and no answer for me. Yes, they did a great job with what we were given, but no, it still muddied it, because there were so many characters that they were trying to give the journey to.
Yeah, well said, Bex. And I think that's one of the things, right? And Jeremy, I want to kind of throw this your way. We see that, right, we did have more of a singular focus hero's journey with the original trilogy. And I would say even perhaps mostly for the prequels as well. But it's true, when trying to blend original trilogy characters with brand new sequel trilogy characters, and we've talked about this ad nauseum both on and off air, oh boy, it got really tough to bring everybody into the story, and it got even tougher to bring people into the story to actually do that character justice. Jeremy, do you think when it comes to Star Wars in particular, do you think that fandom, generically speaking, is better served by having a single or a handful, two to three tops stories that we're following, versus here we go. We're going to turn the barrel over, and everything that drops out, we're going to try to somehow fit into the story and shoehorn it in there in order to meet whatever it is, whether it's demographics or whatever else. And before anyone adds me, I am not saying in any shape or form, I am not saying that we shouldn't have representation on the screen. Duh, obviously we should. I'm just wondering if we can do it and be smart about how we are telling the hero's journey.
I mean, some of this for me is just personal preference, right?
Sure,
and
sure.
I think for me, I like less characters to be the focal point of a story. I'm just not smart enough to follow the storylines of multiple people. Well, now with that said, I enjoy Game of Thrones. You know, it has a ton of characters, but it seems to be focused mainly on the Stark children.
Yeah.
You know, but generally speaking, the stories that I've resonated with me the most, it's just a handful of characters or a character that you follow along with. Mm. Mm-hmm. And those impact me the most. But that, I think more than anything, that's a personal preference, because I would imagine there's some listeners that are like, nope, give me all these characters and like I'll follow their journeys. And I would love that.
Yeah.
And so I think, for me, personal preference, I will say this. If you have like a plan to tell a, you know, 8 to 10 main character storyline, that's challenging. But if you have it planned out and how you want to weave them together and it, like, go for it. Yeah. Like, but that it goes back to like, what's the plan?
Right.
Like, what are you wanting to do? And I think that's why some people were probably frustrated with the sequel trilogy. I will say, you know, with what Bex was talking about a minute ago with your question to her, I really feel like we're still processing the sequel trilogy. You know, it just released digitally. Mm-hmm. It'll be out in Blu-ray very soon. And people are just now, I just watched the documentary, the 2-hour documentary yesterday about the making of The Rise of Skywalker. And some of my perceptions and opinions change just by seeing some of their thinking and like, oh, okay. But I'm still in process. I would imagine some listeners feel the same way of like how they handled all these characters. How do I feel about that?
Yeah.
I think things will evolve as we continually like unpack it and think through it.
Right.
But personally, I love just a few to focus on and really flesh out those characters. And I don't mind a lot of other peripheral characters. And I don't mind with those peripheral characters if you decide to go tell one of their stories later.
Right.
You know, but I like, you know, 2 to 3 kind of focal point, and typically just one focal character,
right?
You know, like Neo in The Matrix.
Right.
You know, just one person that you're kind of following their journey.
Well, I think that's one of the things that we are starting to see emerge with the popularity of The Mandalorian.
Yeah,
we're having more time, more screen time to actually tell those stories. So even if you're bringing in other characters, there's something very special, in my opinion, to this episodic format that, you know, we're going to tell whatever, close to 8 hours worth of television. And then we're going to do it again for a second season. Then we're going to hopefully do for however many seasons this goes. And we found the same to be true with Rebels, where Rebels was a show when it first aired. I was just fairly indifferent. No, that's an overstatement. I just didn't care. And then it hooked me. And this goes back to what you said earlier, Jeremy, as far as like the hooks that it gets in you and brings you into the journey along with the characters. And boy, oh boy, I think that, Jeremy, again, that you and I have said time and time again that some of the most cinematic pieces of Star Wars are contained within Star Wars Rebels.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think you're hitting on that issue of time. Mm-hmm. You know, I think if you, like, as you look at the structure of the hero's journey, it's a hero's journey.
Right.
If you multiply and trying to follow all these different heroes through their journey, that's going to eat up time if you're going to do any one of them justice.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think you're hitting on that idea of like, with this episodic or multiple season, you know, storyline, it can be done. It's possible.
Right.
But if you're telling a trilogy of films, each film a little over 2 hours, and you have, you know, 10 central characters or main characters or featured characters, maybe that's a better way to put it, that's really hard to do.
Yeah.
To do it any justice. And so, unfortunately, I think some characters that might resonate with people might get shortchanged, you know, in that storyline. So I think, though, we'll see as The Mandalorian plays out, but we saw it with Rebels, which has some of the same creative minds behind it.
Right.
You know, how they're going to do this, because we have some really compelling characters on the table.
Yeah.
For The Mandalorian. Let's see how they tell their stories. And I think it's going to expand a little bit the second season, where first season's Mandalorian child, we have all these new characters that have been introduced. I think we're going to start to see the expansion of exploring those characters as well. It's going to be fun to see. And it's going to be fun to start to map out those characters' journeys as well. Mm-hmm. But it goes back to your point. Time is essential to make that effective.
It really is. And I'll go back to something that, you know, I will continue to bang this drum as often as I possibly can. But yeah, and especially how things are marketed to us as viewers. I mean, I don't want to mention anyone that's on this panel right now that's not Jeremy or Bex, that threw a lot of money into a certain Captain Phasma character, including naming his dog. And then major straight out of Wompton as far as that character is concerned. So thank you, Bex. I totally with you on that. I'm curious, though, based on what you just said, total segue. But Jeremy, as we go into season two of The Mandalorian, and we have some noteworthy trade saying that Rosario Dawson is signed on to do Ahsoka Tano, which is great, and we can certainly go down that road. But more importantly, though we don't know the time gap between season one and season two of The Mandalorian, do you think that as they come back next fall, that it's no longer the child, but it is the tween?
We saw a photograph of George Lucas on set during season two filming, and it looks like the child is still the child.
Yes.
So I think we're going to get in Baby Yoda ages so slowly, right? So I think we're going to have this little one with us for a while, and not see a ton of maturity in terms of like growth, like height, but I think we even noticed just within the first season of The Mandalorian how the child started to utilize his powers more and start to do something. He grew, emotionally. And so I'm really excited to see what happens with that dynamic between, you know, the Mandalorian and the child, but also all these peripheral characters and how they'll run into each other. And if it's true that Ahsoka will make an appearance, which she has a lot of connections to Mandalore, the Mandalorian culture, we're probably about to see that play out on the Clone Wars final season now.
Yeah.
We know they end up in the big battle for Mandalore at the end of the season, where she squares off with Darth Maul. They talked about it at Celebration. So it's going to be interesting to see how the Clone Wars will then in turn impact the Mandalorian and what role Ahsoka will play. I would imagine at this point in the story, she's looking for Ezra, you know?
Yeah.
And will we see Sabine, who is supposedly with her, who is a Mandalorian? So it's going to be really interesting to see the decisions the storytellers, Jon Favreau and of course Dave Filoni, make moving forward, and how those decisions will intersect with the hero's journey. Because Filoni and Favreau, if anything, they're well versed in it just based on both of their work.
Right.
You see clear patterns of the hero's journey show up in both creators' artistic endeavors. So
totally with you on that. In fact, you know, as you were unpacking that, you know, one of the things that came across my mind that I can share on a family friendly show was, do we see the Mandalorian continue on what we perceive to be the hero's journey, or do we actually see the child begin his own journey. I don't know. That to me, that's interesting, because that's, and I agree with you, Jeremy, the character of the child is not going to grow much more because Disney has to milk that merchandise cow.
Make the money.
Until the udders fall off. Which is a horrible image now that it comes out of my mouth.
That is terrible.
I love this though. I think that, Jeremy, one of the other things that you mentioned, and Bex, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this too, but there, as far as we know, it's been confessed. It's been confessed that there wasn't much of a plan with this little thing called the sequel trilogy. And so, Bex, going forward with the hero's journey and Star Wars, whether that's on the small screen or the big screen, what do you think lessons learned wise will actually come to give us as fans for the next evolution of heroes and hero's journey within the Star Wars universe?
I think it's going to take the form of what we've seen with The Mandalorian, where I think we're going to see a lot more of the episodic small snippets of the hero's journey instead of giving us the big 2.5 hour movie. We're going to get these 45 minute really delve in deep to different sections of the hero's journey. I'm hopeful for that, at least. Yeah. I'd love to see them be able to go a little bit deeper into the characters and really on, you know, some of the different points of the hero's journey, go in a little bit deeper and see what actually was that conflict? How long did it take for that conflict to resolve itself? The emotions involved in that conflict, instead of getting it for, you know, oh, it's this 15 minute, if that, in a 2.5 hour film.
Yeah.
Instead, we get, you know, a 45 minute, here's what the hero was dealing with and going through. And
I'm with you. I will, it'll read on my epitaph. Bigger fan of episodic small streaming series than large cinematic ones, which is a fairly big headstone, but will match my ego. Let me ask you this though, Bex, do you think that Star Wars, generically speaking, is going to be wiser to give us a hero's journey with characters we don't yet know versus characters that we do know?
I think it would be wise for them to move in that direction.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Jeremy, what are your thoughts on that?
Repeat that question again.
Yeah. Do you think that Star Wars, generically speaking, is it going to be wiser for them to give us a hero's journey with heroes, characters we don't yet know, or take ones that we do know and an attempt to continue on the journey that we are already familiar with?
I think that's the question right now at Lucasfilm. I think that's what they're debating. That's what they're trying to figure out, because if they go back to the well, they'll make money.
Sure.
Like, you throw Kenobi up there, they're going to make money. You throw like some of these familiar characters, it'll generate money.
Yeah.
Is that sustainable?
Right.
Like how often can you go to the well? We don't know. Yeah. They're doing it. I mean, the movies are making some money, but there's also some discussion of the trends, especially with the films, are on the decline. Meanwhile, you have this TV show on Disney Plus that really captured our cultural imagination in the fall, right? And so I think that is the central question, or at least one of them, that they're trying to unpack. You know, what do we do next? What do we start with new characters, new stories, clean slate in some senses? Or do we go back to some of these familiar characters, or do we do a little bit of both? And what I think is going to happen for the time being is it's going to be a little bit of both. I think we're going to see on Disney Plus for some familiar characters. We already know what's coming, like Cassian and then Obi-Wan, hopefully. And then I think with film, though, it's time to go somewhere else with totally new characters, new vision. And I think they're going to, I wonder how gun shy they are with the films going to a new place, if that's causing some fear. With Marvel, those things obviously in the comics were already established, for example, Guardians of the Galaxy. But when it comes to film, that was sort of risky, like a raccoon, like really, like that's going to be popular. And it was.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what Lucasfilm needs to make the decision about. Like, are we ready to take some risks? And I do believe whether you liked or hated The Last Jedi, Rian Johnson like decided to do some of that.
Oh yeah.
And yeah. But the risks he was taking was with some very well established characters. That was like playing with fire, right?
Yeah.
And so I think if you give some filmmaker storyteller like a Rian Johnson a clean slate, here, create these new characters, yeah, tell a story, I think it might be really good for Star Wars, just in general, mm-hmm, fandom, maybe. I don't know. Fandom's so bizarre. It's just like a rolling dumpster fire. Just what you just roll it to wherever. Yeah. But you know, I think that's the conversation. And my hope is that we'll get a little bit of both, but eventually we'll start to just start getting all new stories with mm-hmm new characters.
And see, this is where, you know, I was one of the fans that was like, give us Kenobi. And then they announced Kenobi. I'm just like, oh crap. what are they going to do with that character? And then I admit, for as excited as I am to see a live action Ahsoka, I'm also very like, oh crap. What are they going to do with that character? And so, fingers crossed. I am all about having some new characters to fall in love with and be brought along on their hero's journey with them. Well, listen, we want to know what you guys are thinking about this. And as certainly we continue to unpack Joseph Campbell's work, we invite you to follow along with us if you'd like. You can find a copy of The Hero with a Thousand Faces out there in the outer realms on the interwebs. Of course, you can purchase it legally on things like Amazon and Borders and Barnes & Noble. Actually, I don't know if you can port on Borders. Does Borders even exist anymore? Probably not. But I know Barnes & Noble and Amazon certainly do. Or, yeah, you can probably just search the title, Joseph Campbell, Hero of a Thousand Faces, PDF, and it might find its way to your search engine. In fact, I'm sure it will. With that being said, hey, it was good to hang out with you guys again. Jeremy, Bex.
I know.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Quarantine life.
Nice to
baby.
See your faces.
Yeah, right.
Oh, I might just sit in this closet for another few hours.
Listen,
you know,
if
I'll
the
never
kids
tell.
Don't come knocking, I mean, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? Oh, my goodness. With that, my little tauntauns, that's going to wrap it up for this episode of Unmistakably Star Wars. We will see you next time in the digital docking bay. And until then, may the Force be with you.
Unmistakably Star Wars is a member of the Star Wars Escape Pods Network. Explore more great content and get to know our sister shows at weareescapepods.com and on Twitter at @WeAreEscapePods. The Star Wars Escape Pods Network, promoting positivity in fandom. This podcast is a production of Be Heard Studios. To learn more about Be Heard Studios and its shows, as well as opportunities for those looking to begin a podcast, visit us online at BeHeardStudios.com. Be Heard Studios, creators of diverse listening experiences.